I want to talk about another social theorist that you may know from popular culture, Chumbawamba. This is the 10th anniversary of their song, Everything You Know Is Wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And I would argue that everything that you have read in the news, the commercial news media, is wrong. New York Times, NPR, MSNBC, you notice I'm not talking about Fox. Everything you know from those others is wrong. What do you know about Yemen? What do you know about Iran? What do you know about Korea? What do you know about the prosperity of the United States, that more than half of the people in this country do not make $35,000 a year? What do you know about police violence? 1,500 people were killed last year. ISIS, Brazil, fake news. Compare Charlottesville and what you know about Charlottesville with what you know about Ferguson if you read the New York Times or listen to MSNBC. Who deported more people, Trump or Obama? Who sent more drones, Trump or Obama? I mean, it could go on. What do you know about Venezuela? And that's the other date that I want to draw to your attention. In 3 weeks, there will be an election in Venezuela. Do you know they've had 22 elections in 24 years? Do you know that Jimmy Carter said that they have the freest and the best elections he's ever seen in his long career? Do you know that the National Endowment for Democracy in the United States has funded to the tune of $30 million disruption, sabotage, organizing? This is not Russian intervention in an election. This is direct U.S. intervention from the National Endowment for Democracy, and you can read it. Don't take my word for it. Don't take fake news for it. Go to the National Endowment for Democracy and see why they fund disruption in Venezuela, because they say they think participatory democracy is a bad thing. Participatory democracy is a bad thing. Who started the sanctions on Venezuela? Who decided that Venezuela was a threat to the United States? Obama. The problem here is that there are not voices that have truth that goes beyond truthiness, which is why we have this panel on global crises and independent media. Because without independent media, without participatory media, without people that are actually living their daily lives, having an opportunity to speak and broadcast, not on the internet that becomes increasingly tightened, not on Facebook, not on Twitter, but actually being able to broadcast to millions of people. That requires a change of the structure of the media in this country and other countries. We do have some glimpses of things that can be different, and that's why we have the panel that we have. I was trying to show to people today that there is, on the front page of the Chicago Teachers Union newspaper, the front page of the independent newspaper of the Chicago Teachers Union has a picture you will not see in the Tribune, you will not see in the New York Times, you will not see on WGN, which is a picture of the demonstration in Brazil of teachers that are against neoliberalism, austerity, and cutbacks in education. And it's happening in Brazil, and it's happening in other places, in other countries like West Virginia.
That's right. Other countries.
Other countries like West Virginia. Okay. Which is a question of what are our sources for the news. Another question is, how is the news framed? If we talk about U.S. interventions, most places in the world are done under the framing of humanitarian interventions. That's all because the media is controlled by certain corporate interests. If we imagined having a different kind of media where the population actually had access to be able to have their voices, whether it's VON or it's the Chicago Teachers Union paper, what if that media spanned a continent, which is what Telesur does, Television of the South, that's based in Venezuela, but it has participants from Bolivia, Argentina, Cuba, other countries. So I'm very pleased to have as our final speaker and our guest this evening, Abby Martin, who's a journalist and presenter on Telesur, the lead on Empire Files, which is an investigative news program on Telesur. And I hope that she talks to us about some of the global crises and the role that Telesur and other independent media would play. And I'm so pleased to introduce to you Abby Martin.
Thank you so much, everyone, for coming out. It's a cold day. It's been a long day. I really appreciate everyone just coming to this event. And thank you, Lee, and thank you, UDC. It's been an incredible event today, and I really enjoyed all the talks that I went to. So my name's Abby. As he said, I'm the host of the Empire Files on Telesaur. And what we do is really, we're trying to reclaim these narratives that have been set by the colonizers and imperialists in history, right? History is written by the victors. So we're trying to retell these stories through the eyes of the marginalized and oppressed who have essentially been erased from history. And the show just starts with the U.S. as the central point, right? The U.S. empire should be the starting point from basically every issue internationally and domestic. Because every international issue needs to be seen through the lens of colonizers and colonized. How has the world been shaped by those who have won, right, and colonized the planet? And in terms of on the domestic front, every issue needs to be seen through the egregious, outrageous amount that we spend on our military spending, right? We spend next 12 countries combined. We have an empire that's the largest empire the world's ever seen with 900 bases that we know about. If you ask Pentagon officials, they'll say they actually don't even know because of the amount of lily pad bases that spawn off of that. And what does this do to the American psyche on a domestic front? You know, the militarization of the police, the toxic masculinity, all these things from the top down, how is that affecting us to be empire babies, right? And what does the U.S. do? It enforces its economic hegemony through brutal and violent militarism all around the world. In Latin America alone, we've intervened in 56 times in different countries to usurp the democratic processes to secure U.S. business interests just in Latin America. The U.S. consumes the world's most energy. The Pentagon is the world's largest polluter. It's exempt from all climate treaties. And the U.S. government, as the moral arbitrator of the world, telling who can and who can't have nuclear weapons, supplies 70% of the world's dictatorships with weapons and training. Can you believe that? 70%. So, of course, all of this that I just outlined is not permitted on the corporate media. You'll never hear this framing, right? You'll never hear the debate. When I bring up that the U.S. is an empire, people think I'm talking about Star Wars. That's how limited the debate and dialogue is about something that affects the entire planet and is subjugating most of humanity. So corporate media doesn't just serve as a vehicle for advertising for defense contractors, banks, weapons, right? It serves to protect and promote the U.S. empire. It tells us who our friend and our foe is, right? Who's our friend? Well, Saudi Arabia and Israel. Who's our foe? Venezuela. Venezuela, Iran, Russia, Syria, North Korea, right? What do these have in common? Well, they're not enslaved to U.S. economic hegemony. They haven't laid down like carpets to U.S. capital and militarism. You know, we hear about state media, right, this Russian propaganda apparatus, and they bemoan apparatuses like RT, Russia Today, or Telesur, a Latin American conglomerate that I work for. But Al Jazeera is lauded. This is a Qatari theocratic dictatorship with literal slave markets. So why is that the case? Why is some state media okay and some is not? You know, why is it okay to have France 24, BBC, Voice of America? These are all murderous empires that somehow it's actually amazing to work for, right? The corporate media might as well be state media. We all know this. It acts literally as an extension of the state, and it serves empire. In fact, it's weaponized to serve empire. We need to think of corporate media not as just these three or four networks, not as just, you know, MSNBC, Fox, NBC. We need to think of it at all the extensions off of that, because it's all funded by the same people with the same interests, right? Vox, Daily Beast, all of these millennial rebranding of corporate media for my generation and those younger than me. Vice is actually one of the worst offenders because they've just rebranded this kind of imperialist propaganda in terms of their foreign policy. They open their newsrooms to the Obama administration like that's cool. You don't lay down for power and embrace them into your studio. That's wrong. That's not cool. That's not hip. So that really disgusts me. You know, living in D.C., D.C. journalists are just stenographers for power. They tell the narrative set by the power brokers, and they just want access to that next White House correspondence dinner. That's all that matters to them. The New York Times and Washington Post so-called papers of record are actually the premier purveyors of fake news. They post continuous war propaganda, and they just cite anonymous government officials to sell these wars over and over again. Look no further than the Iraq War, as you all well know. Going back to the whole subsidization, or the media being subsidized by defense contractors, oil companies, and banks, after Trump bombed Syria last month, CNN basically did a 3-minute infomercial for Tomahawk missiles for Raytheon. It was called Inside a Tomahawk Missile Factory. They took you through and just showed you how cool it was and how great Tomahawk missiles are after they killed a bunch of innocent people in Syria. CNN is amazing to me because they pretend like they're, you know, under attack from the Trump administration. Look at, our press freedom is under attack. When's the last time they talked about journalists being executed in Israel? You tell me. So don't feign that this is some, you know, this bullshit that Trump is criticizing them. Oh, what about the war on whistleblowers? What about the war on journalists and press here? What about that? All you have is this bipartisan push for war with a parading rotation of generals and defense contractors that will tell you who we need to bomb and how we're not bombing them enough already. And when you look at the neoliberal blob, is what I like to call it, they pretend, on one hand, Trump is this mentally unfit next Hitler, yet on the other hand, they want him to start multiple wars on multiple fronts with nuclear-armed nations. It's quite astounding. You know, they never criticize him for the right things. What about upping drone strikes 400%, carpet-bombing civilians? Where's their criticism on that? You know, I'm just going to give just a couple quick stories that elucidate what I'm talking about from my own personal experiences working from RT to Telesur to being in some of these countries that the corporate media incessantly propagandizes us about, tells us, you know, who the enemies are and who the dissenters are, and those are our enemies as well. There are outlets, of course, that don't rely on corporate sponsorship. These rely on state funds. They fit outside this hegemony of Western corporate domination, and they allow the space for radical voices that rebuke corporate power, rebuke war. One of those is Russia Today. Love it or hate it, there's a reason why I went there. There's a reason why anti-imperialist journalists like Chris Hedges are there right now to talk about real issues. The funding is in the name, right? Russia Today. No, it's not the cartoonish depiction of a Putin propaganda roundtable discussion where we have, you know, Putin in our ear every day. I was able to pave more editorial freedom at that network than anyone on the corporate media. I was able to pave so much editorial freedom that I actually spoke out against Putin multiple times, did rigorous debates about Putin's policies, spoke about the MH17 downing. That is incredible. I mean, think about that. What that shows me is that all these corporate news anchors, you know, Phil Donahue can't say the same thing. He was fired after speaking out against the Iraq War. Cenk Uygur got fired after speaking out against Obama on MSNBC. What does that tell you about the so-called Putin propaganda network that I was able to have the main opinion show for an entire year after speaking out? That's amazing. And, you know, call me crazy, but I think that as this establishment is fomenting a Cold War with Russia, that we should have the Russian perspective. I want the Russian perspective in a world dominated by Western corporate media. That should be something that we actually intake as media literate, critical thinking people. I think that we can handle that, right? We don't need someone to tell us what we can and can't watch. So fast forward 2 years after my show was over on RT, and we're all waiting with bated breath for this Russian intelligence report that proves Russian meddling in the election. And so I was quite alarmed to see that half of the report was actually just about RT. It wasn't proof at all about Russia interfering in the election. It was literally just about how RT programming foments radical discontent, specifically my show. My show, it zeroed in on. So I'm sorry for Trump. The intelligence community actually said that I was a reason, right? That's how insane the discourse has gotten, so I apologize. And what was the show covering? No, it did not praise Putin. No, we didn't whitewash any crimes about Russia. No, we didn't whitewash the egregious inequality in the nation. What was it covering? It was covering real issues about America. That's the threat to them. That is the threat. So what are they saying? What did they say in the intelligence report? Well, they said my show that covered fracking, Occupy Wall Street, greed, inequality, Hillary Clinton, that is fomenting radical discontent. That's Russian propaganda. So it's Russian propaganda to talk about the reality of this country. It's Russian propaganda to talk about how half of the people living in this country are living paycheck to paycheck. That's Russian propaganda? Talking about reality? All right. You know, and these same, this is what's so amazing to me, these same people that sold us the Iraq War, right? The architects and the WMD propagandists, where are they now? They're right on the Russia beat. These are now the so-called resistance leaders. These are the people who are planting the seeds about how everything that I just mentioned is so-called Russian propaganda. If you criticize the murderous foreign policy of the U.S., you are a stooge for the Kremlin. Jill Stein is now a stooge for the Kremlin, right? Because she's criticizing war. It's unbelievable. So these are the Russia experts today, the Bill Kristols, the Michael Chertoffs. And what is this doing? This is all laying the framework, right? This is all laying the framework for just more crackdowns on civil liberties, more crackdowns on internet freedom. They want us to think our enemies are not those people far away who rule over us with offshore tax havens. Those aren't our enemies. Our enemies are us. They're your friends, they're your allies, they're your neighbors. Those people that you think are right and well, right, that have things to say maybe about fracking, about Black Lives Matter, no. Those people are useful idiots, the leftists, the dissidents. Those people have evil, dark forces behind them. Ooh, so don't trust them. Yeah, forget about the people who actually control things, right? Just focus on people like me, people like Project Censored, people like Jill Stein. So what is this all about? I mean, really, inevitably, like I said before, it's about economic hegemony, it's about empire and imperialism, and it's about the fact that Russia and China are inevitably going to be competitors, right? They're not servants to the U.S. empire. So we're living in a discourse right now where we just have mass hallucinations. Everything is either fake news that's not subservient to their dear leader Trump, or Russian propaganda that dares to question reality. Telesaur is a little bit different than RT. This grew out of a contagion of this progressivism, these progressive revolutionary movements, out of an entity that was ravaged by colonialism. Latin America was ravaged by colonialism. It saw revolutions, counter-revolutions. Chavez's victory in 1999 sparked a contagion in the region. They called it the Pink Tide. There were several electoral victories of progressive leaders, and Telesaur was an outgrowth of this pan-Latin American unity and independence. Because they saw the corporate media apparatus as a weapon, right? It was being weaponized to destroy their countries, like it is all over the world, and overthrow their democratically elected governments. So Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez, in accordance with six Latin American countries, Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Nicaragua, Uruguay, and Ecuador, all came together to form this alternative to the corporate media stranglehold called Telesaur. I have 100% editorial freedom. I sell my show to Telesaur. And I have had nothing vetted. I've interviewed President Correa several times. I've interviewed the defense minister of Venezuela. I have never had anyone look over my questions, look over my material, and never tell me what to do. And I've been on the ground to see with my own eyes how the corporate media is uniformly lying to us about every single issue that I just talked about and pushing false narratives all the time. I went to Palestine for a month. And I'm a pariah in the corporate press because of this. We all know what happens to people who dare to question the 100% pro-Israel narrative that's forced down our throats. The only time Palestinian humanity is discussed is when there's egregious war crimes, and sometimes not even that. The Great March of Return is happening for, I think, the sixth or seventh week in a row, where countless unarmed protesters have been executed, thousands maimed, shot with live ammunition, the targeting of journalists, children, rescue workers. The media calls it clashes. New York Times says, oh, more people died in clashes. You mean snipers standing 100 yards away and just executing people through scopes? Oh, that's an interesting clash. You know, back in 2014, during the last egregious massacre in Gaza where 500 children were killed, I remember the New York Times, I'll never forget this. It said, missile finds people watching the World Cup in a cafe. The missile was just walking along the beach and just found people and then decided to blow up. That's how passive the New York Times talks about massacres when it comes to Israel. They call it the most complicated issue in the world. It's very, very simple, actually. It's an apartheid state that is openly ethnically cleansing an indigenous population and has been for the last 60 years. This is an untouchable issue. You are smeared and vilified. It's completely third rail. And what happens to people who dare to talk about this? Well, I'll just tell you what happened to me. I mean, I was banned from Gaza. I was called an Iranian agent. I thought I was a Russian agent, so I'm confused about, you know, I can't keep track. So the Israeli government pretty much told me that I'm banned from looking at one of the gravest humanitarian crises this world has ever seen, that I pay with my tax dollars. And Stand With Us, which is basically a propaganda extension of the Israeli government, smeared the hell out of me, right? I went on the Joe Rogan show, talked about this on probably the biggest platform that has been talked about, and they smeared me, they threatened him with a defamation lawsuit, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes on and on and on. Obviously, we use Israel for battering ram in the Middle East. We could just see no further than what's going on in Syria, using it to bomb, right, time and again. And it's surrounded by these post-colonial states, some of which are still independent. So, of course, we want Israel as this garrison state there to carry out our wills. Venezuela. Venezuela is an incredible issue because I was even tricked by the propaganda before I went. You know, it's hard. Even as a media analyst for 10 years, it's really hard to go against just this uniform grain of just 100% one line. So we hear the same thing time and again, right? Everywhere. Fomenting support for regime change there. Everyone is starving. Maduro's a totalitarian dictator who's murdering protesters in the street. So I went there with my own eyes to see that actually there's a huge part of the story that is not being told, and that's obviously not true, what I just said about the propaganda. You know, just a couple things that go contrary to this. I mean, tens of thousands of people, yes, they were in the street protesting Maduro, but there's also tens of thousands of people in the streets pro-government, right? They're actually in support of the government there. The people that you don't see on the news are the black and indigenous people, tens of thousands, if not millions of people who are completely supportive of the government. Chavismo is a very vibrant, strong political force that you just see all over the country. And, you know, I interviewed people who will never be seen in the Western media, these people who would die for the cause. They were so conscious of imperialism, they knew more about our history than anyone that I would pull off a U.S. street. It was quite astounding, the political consciousness of a country that is constantly under threat of being overthrown. Like Lee was saying, their elections are free, actually way more transparent than ours. Every vote is audited. And the media is actually mostly private and very anti-government. The supermarkets aren't empty like The Walking Dead. There's a shortage of very specific items, and this is an economic war going on that you can look at my documentaries on the Empire Files to learn more. But one thing that really bothers me about like places like Vice, you know, they go and they embed themselves in the front line, the contingent of the protesters with masks, throwing Molotov cocktails, burning building down, and they never actually interview these people and say, like, what are you doing and why, right? So I actually did that. Wow, was it interesting. A lot of these people are, you know, that basically what they told me, one guy was holding a Molotov cocktail and I was just like, what are you, you know, why are you doing this? And he was like, I can't be an entrepreneur here. And I was like, that's why you're going to burn down a food distribution warehouse, is because you can't own a business in Venezuela. A lot of them just kind of sounded like they didn't know what the f*** they were doing and why they were doing it. So instead of glorifying these people, you know, we talk truthfully about what was happening, how that night that I was embedded with the protests, I saw them commandeer several 18-wheeler trucks, set up flaming barricades on the freeway, motorcycles were being driven off the road, no arrests that night. They did tell us, film what the government does to us, not what we do. And I had to tell them, you know, I'm American media, I support you guys, because it was so intense and threatening, and I know how much they hate Telesur. Because really what this is, the front lines of the protests, there are fascist contingent that actually burns people alive. Several Chavistas and black Venezuelans were burned alive. That is fascist. That is a fascist characteristic of a movement. So I'm not talking about the majority of the protesters, I'm talking about the people who are glorified by entities like Vice. And it makes me sick because I was actually chased out of the country by a virtual lynch mob for literally just talking about the fact that they were killing people. When you look at that death toll in Venezuela, the majority of the deaths were the result of the protesters either executing people, the flaming barricades, etc. So we got chased out, and after we did, our colleague from Telesur was actually shot in the back by one of these protesters there. You know, as much as we hear about Venezuela, we never hear about Colombia, its neighbor. This border is very porous. It's actually the most dangerous country in the world for unionists. Teachers. I met teachers there who had to live in exile because of these paramilitary death squads that the U.S. basically fomented for the last 50 years. We've poured $10 billion into that country, and the Kennedy Doctrine created the paramilitary death squads that had disappeared tens of thousands of leftists and peasants. And the government, as much as they want to bemoan FARC, they are stooges, not only with the U.S., but with actual paramilitary drug runners and drug cartels. I'll just briefly just say something about North Korea. I mean, this is a country where you could literally say anything about, and it's just printed without question. There's so many fake stories that have been debunked, but of course, those headlines are never put front and center, right? The retractions are never put front and center. A lot of these fake news stories are based on just one anonymous defector. And guess how much defectors are paid to tell these stories? $860,000. That's the bounty. The more salacious the story, the more money you're given. So, you know, you have to keep that in mind when you're reading these things about these so-called enemy countries, right? I'm not trying to paint or gloss over the human rights abuses. I'm just saying the truth. I'm saying that you have to use a critical lens because there's so much that we don't know. Then there's the framing, right? The framing that this is some incomprehensibly inane leadership, incomprehensibly evil, right? Just constantly attacking the U.S. with genocidal threats. Of course, it's never talked about how the U.S. has shaped the Korean Peninsula, how we destroyed the country, decimated the infrastructure, how we have B-52 bombers ready to drop nukes surrounding them, tens of thousands of U.S. troops surrounding them in constant war games. So again, the framing, the missing context between all these countries. What do they have in common? That's why I'm an advocacy journalist. We don't have time. I'm not gonna sit here and pretend to be objective. I'm gonna sit here, lay my heart out on my sleeve, and say what I'm advocating for. I'm advocating for marginalized and oppressed people around the world to take back their agency from what we have subjugated them. I'm debunking the propaganda and exposing the truth because that can make a great impact, because the crimes of U.S. empire and its junior partners are only exposed through the work of brave activists and brave journalists. It has the potential to stop wars. This has the potential to strengthen social movements. We have to have an informed populace in order to end empire, right? We need a critical mass here. But first, we need to inform people about what the hell is going on. That's why political education is key. History is instructive. We need to understand how we got here so we can prevent further atrocities, further wars. We need journalists who are unafraid to call out the violent economic oppression of capitalism. We must hold the power brokers accountable for their words, deeds, and crimes. And as an American journalist, you sure as hell believe that I am focused on ending the U.S. empire, the world's greatest source of suffering, the greatest threat to peace around the world, because it's our best hope to enrich millions of people and build an actual just and equitable future. Thanks so much.